Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Hello, Shalom Aleichem. Welcome back to today's Daf Hayemi, Bava Kama Daf Tes. We got up to Ches Amud Beis, two lines off the bottom of the Amud. V'Amar Abaye, here comes another halacha from Abaye. Reuven Shemachar Sode L'Shimon Shaloi Be'achrayis. Imagine Reuven sells his field to Shimon and takes no responsibility. You lose it? Not my responsibility. Don't come back and complain to me. So even if, you know, my Baal Chayiv, my creditor, etc., will come and repossess that field, will come foreclose your land, I'm not responsible for those scenarios. Now, V'yatsu aleha asikin. Asikin, Rashi says, are oirurin, complainers, meaning individuals who have a claim on this field. Well, you know, your seller owed us money, etc., etc. So what now? Shimon, the buyer, wants to go back on the deal. I didn't have this in mind. I didn't mean to get it, you know, stuck with your creditors. So can he go back on it or not? It depends. If it's prior to Shimon's chazaka on the field, so Rashi learns, Shimon did not really make a kinyan, did not really acquire the field. He didn't take possession. He didn't do chazaka. One form of chazaka is, you know, digging in the field, etc. He didn't do that, nor did he pray for it. So at this early point, he can say, look, I'm going back on this. So despite the fact that he was willing to buy the field without any guarantees, without any achrayis, but at this early point, he can just go back on it. But once he does chazak and is kind of the field, ein yochel lachzer boy, he can no longer go back on that deal. My time of why? Normally, because Reuven, the seller, tells him, look, you purchased it blindly. You didn't care about achrayis. It's like a mashal chayis of the kitri. A bag full of air, you know, tied up. Kitri ties. Basically, you bought a blind piece of, you know, merchandise. Savras v'kiblos, you decided, you agreed to purchase. Now, Tosis in Vava Metzia asks on Rashi, of course, if I haven't yet made a kinyan, of course I can go back on it. Tosis learns that was speaking that he did make a kinyan, but he didn't yet, you know, take a walk around the field. He didn't yet really internalize the field. So until that point, the derech is, the common practice is that the buyer still has, you know, like a 15-day refund. He can still go back on the deal until it's finalized. It's not yet finalized until he takes a walk around it and really gets into it. At what point is it considered a chazoka? Rashi learns, he dug, like Disha, he dug a bit around the, you know, boundaries. That's a form of chazoka. Once he does that, it's his. Tosis learns, he already did actual chazak. Rather, he didn't yet really confirm the deal because he didn't do dayish. Dayish means like walking around and sort of stepping around the boundaries, taking a walk around the field. It hadn't yet been done. The deal wasn't yet finalized. And therefore, if there are troublemakers on the horizons, I can go back on this deal. But dafka shalei b'achrayis. When do we say that after chazak it's too late? That's because I purchased the field without achrayis. Aval ba'achrayis loy, but if there was achrayis added to the deal, which means anything goes wrong, you have to repay. If it's repossessed, if it's foreclosed, the seller has to compensate the buyer. So in this case, even if it's late in the game, after chazaka, so what? You are makabel achrayis. Any trouble, you compensate. So compensate me right now. V'gadam. There's another version of this halacha. Afilu b'achrayis nami. Even if those achrayis stipulated, the buyer has no right to go back at this early point. You know, when the rumors are out there that it's that the Baal Chayiv, at this early point, you have no right to lay claim against the seller. Why? Because it's still premature. The amalei, because the seller can tell the buyer, look, I know there are rumors that it's going to be repossessed, but did it happen yet? Achvi tirfach. Tirfach is a a shtar document, which Bezdin affords the bank, like a foreclosure document. You have a right to repossess that field. Show it to me. When that happens, I'll compensate you. Until then, who knows? And therefore, the seller is not responsible at this point. Now, you may recall, back on Daf Zayin, we had a stira between two psukim. One pasuk says, you have to pay the best. Meitav sadeyu yishal, best, highest quality field. So the nizik, the victim of financial loss, is compensated by the mazik, who damages property, he has to give him the best. Then comes another pasuk and says, well, yashiv, kesev, yashiv, yashiv, an extra lashon, anything you want. Pay anything, as long as it has value. It can be the most inferior quality merchandise. It's a stira between the two psukim. Which one is it, the best or the worst? We had a teretz that we proposed. Here comes another teretz. And the reason why we waited until now, Rashi explains, because we got into a discussion about Meitav, we ran into Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Kiv. So we sort of, let it play out. But now we go back to that stira. Rav Huna Amar, he comes to answer. And he says, look, they're both true. Oy kesef, oy meitav. You have two options. You broke his window? Okay. Either you pay your meitav, your best property, if you choose to pay with karka. Otherwise, if you pay with cash, that's also fine. You have two options. Kesef, oy meitav. Eisvei, Rav Huna, Rav Nachman, Rav Huna. So Rav Nachman asks him a kasha. It's only one of these two options? Property. The best property or cash. Brisa says, you can give him anything. Yashiv, the pasuk says, Yashiv, anything can be applied for compensation payment. L'rabbis shavei kesef. I feel the super, anything has value, even bran. Well, Hachamai Skinner was speaking to Leslie. He doesn't have anything better than that. He doesn't have money. He doesn't have fields. All he has is bran. So that's what he pays. Well, what do you mean, either Leslie? If he has nothing else, treat, of course. What do you expect him to do? Maldotema, perhaps, I would say. Amrina, we obligate this fellow to go and sell his bran and get some cash and pay the man de nizek. Zil tarako, burden yourself. Make the effort. Zavin, sell the cheap merchandise. Vai sile kesef, and hand the money over to the nizek. Mashmon Lechish says, no. You give whatever you have. So you meant to give the beitav or the kesef, but if you're stuck, you give anything. Amar Vasi, you should know that ksofim harihen kekarka. Money is treated like land. What's the point of making this equation? Ilei melinim meitav. Did Rav Asi mean to simply address the previous discussion that when the Torah says you pay meitav, it means if you're paying karka, but if you're paying cash, that's also fine. Well, then it's exactly what Rav Huna said. Hainu de Rav Huna. He's just repeating Rav Huna's halacha. It should have said v'chein or Rav Asi. Not sort of put Rav Asi as a separate independent halacha. He's just copying Rav Huna. Elu l'shnei achim. Rather, he's speaking about a totally different halacha. We have two brothers. Shechalku, two brothers inherited their father's assets. In this manner. V'notel echad karka, v'echad ksofim. Reuben took the land, Shimon took the cash. The father's creditor comes and grabs the karka from Reuven as repayment for his loan. So Reuven lost all his Yerusha and Shimon walked away with the cash. So for fairness sake, what happens? Shimon has to sort of split the loss. The azalhai v'shokl parka v'ksafim ba'day. So Shimon can't just walk away with the cash. He has to go. Let's say, Reuven lost the $100 field. So Shimon has to sort of split it with him because he's equally responsible to repay his father's loan. He has to pay him $50. That's what Rav Asi meant to say, ksofim hariyam kikarka, that the fellow who took the money is just as responsible to address his father's loan as the fellow who took the karka. Well, pshita, of course, why would I think otherwise? Hi, bro, I love bro. Reuben is a son, Shimon is not a son. They're both equally responsible. So that's a kasha on this pshat in Rav Asi. Why speak about such an obvious case? Igadami. Actually, there was another version of this kasha that we find it difficult to understand. In fact, why Shimon has to compensate Reuven? It's not his problem. Adrab, just the opposite. Lead the chisa the other way. The Amar Le Shimon can turn to Reuven and say, look, you know why I took money? Because I didn't want to get tied up with karka and creditors. Lachi shakli ksof. The reason why I took the money, look, suppose somebody robs my money. Am I going to come seek compensation from you? And of course not. You're not responsible for my money. Lachi shaklas ara. And that's why you, for the same reason, you took the karka, because I'm off the hook. The matarfa, let's say somebody grabs the karka from you for father's compensation. I'm not going to pay you anything. Basically, let's do it fair and square. You took the karka with all its privileges. It's not going to get stolen, but you have a responsibility to live up to our father's obligations, if in fact it comes to be. And likewise, I took the kesef, which is something that can be stolen. True, I took the risk, but it comes with a fringe benefit. I'm no longer responsible for our father's chayv. If you lose your karka to the bachayv, you're not going to come to me. So it's unfair to demand that Shimon contributes to this repayment. Ella, rather, due to both these kashas, one way or the other, the pshat and Ravasi seems to be a bit difficult to understand. And therefore, we're going to sort of shift. When Rav Asi says, Ksafim is treated like karka, he meant like this. Elo, Lishnei Achim, we have two brothers. Shecholku. So again, we have two brothers, but this time they split karka. They inherited their father's karka. Reuben took, $50 worth. Shimon took $50 worth. Sorry, Reuben took $1,000. Shimon took $1,000 of karka. Ubo bal chayv v'not al chalkish echem nehem. Comes the bal chayv of the father and grabs $100 worth of Reuben's field. Here we say, certainly Shimon has to contribute. Because look, let's go through both kashas we had before. One kasha was, why should, we thought that only, we thought that he took the karka and he took the kesef. And the halacha was that the person who took the kesef has to compensate the bala karka. We asked the kasha, well, why not? That was one way to ask. The other kasha was, no, that's why he took kesef, because he doesn't want to be responsible. So we're sort of going away from that pshat. They both took karka. They split a piece of land equally. The Malchayv grabbed Reuven's portion. Comes to Rav Asi and he says, look, Shimon does have to compensate Reuven, but he has a choice. He can give him part of his land, or he can just pay him off with kesef. That's a chiddush. That he could sort of pay him off with kesef. Asks the Gemara, okay, that's a nice halacha, but Rav Asi himself had already taught us this halacha elsewhere. Why the repetition? V'amra Rav Asi chadazim, he already taught it to us a different time. The itma we learned, ha'acham shechalku. Right, so two brothers split the Yerusha. Uba b'alchay v'not al-chalkish l'echem mehem. Comes to b'alchay and grabs Reuven's portion. What happens? We have three shittas. Rav Amar, Batla Machlekes. See, Rav holds a breira, Yesh breira, which means that we assume that whatever Reuven took from his father's Yerusha was meant for, was destined for him, was earmarked for him, and Shimon's portion was earmarked for him. And therefore, they're both considered Yerushim. And what happens when the father's Valchayv comes and makes trouble? They're both equally responsible. Just because Reuven happened to be the one that came forth and gave away his karka doesn't mean that he's fully responsible. Shimon has to share the burden. So the machlekes, meaning the division that they made amongst themselves, is sort of nullified. They redo it now, taking into account the land that they had to transfer to the Balchayv. So whatever's left behind, in this case, whatever Shimon has, is redivided, redistributed between the brothers. Shmuel Amar Vita, Shmuel says no. When Reuven allowed the Balchayv to collect on him, he sort of gave up. He forfeited any Yerusha. He gave up his claim on the other brothers. In this case, his claim on Shimon. And soon we'll explain why. Rav Asi Amar, we're not sure how to deal with this. Is Reuven entitled to compensation from Shimon or not? So therefore, Noitel Revia Bakarka, Revia Bamois. He gets 25%. So let's say he lost $100 on the deal. The Balchayv came, took $100 of his karka. So typically you would say he can go back to Shimon for 50, right? because they're meant to share the burden. He only gets a quarter of what he paid, meaning 25%, and 25% he loses. And Shimon has the option of paying whatever that is, $25. He can pay it by way of giving him a piece of land, or Mois, just, you know, paying him off with money, which is basically Rav Asi's halacha before, that we say money is equally regarded like karka. So that was the kasha, why the repetition. We'll get to that soon. Before that, let's just first, you know, let's first understand this, you know, this three-way machlekes. So again, the case was, both Reuven and Shimon split their father's Yerusha. He took half the karka, he took half the karka. Bal Chayv of Reuven, the father, came and collected and repossessed, you know, $100 worth of Reuven's land. What happens now? Rav says, you know, let's redivide. Shimon has to compensate for Reuven's loss. And Shmuel says, no, Reuven loses. And Rav Asi says, sort of, let's make a compromise, half and half. Rav, I'm about the machlokes, and let's explain. Why did Rav say that we redo the whole division? Because he holds, Acham Shechalku, when two brothers inherit and divide their father's inheritance, Ki Yerushim Havu, we assume whatever he gets was meant for him, whatever he got was meant for him, and they're both equally responsible as per, you know, their Yerushim status to compensate, to address their father's Baal Chayv. So now when Reuven did it on behalf of all of them. He sort of represented all the brothers. They all have to come back and redivide and redistribute whatever's left behind. Shmuel Amar Viter. Shmuel says Reuven lost out. Why? Because he holds to Acham Shechalku. When brothers divide, Lekuches. And the Mefarshim explained that Shmuel holds Ein Bereira. We can't just assume that whatever you got was meant for you, whatever. It's a big unknown. We don't know what's yours, so they sort of divide amongst each other. It's sort of like, it's like a transaction. I take something which was meant for you, in exchange I give you something which was meant for me. So basically, it's like a sale. So when brothers divide Yerusha, it's like they're buying and selling from each other. Here's the punchline. There's no achrayis. Nobody undertook responsibility. Nobody guaranteed this so-called sale. So it's basically at your own risk. And if Reuven lost part of his karka, it's his loss. Therefore, Shimon doesn't have to compensate. Rav Asi is not sure. And therefore he says, look, you know what? Instead of taking back $50 from Shimon, $25. Rav Asi, he takes only 25% of his payout, either with karka, Reviya b'mois, or money, because he's not sure and treat this whole Yerusha situation. Masapkali ki Yerushindom is like Rav, they're Yerushim, so he's entitled to, you know, 50% of what he spent. Ikalukuchas Domu is it considered like a buyer, in which case he totally loses because he didn't take achrayus on the deal. Hilkach, therefore we give him only 25%, so meaning Reuven paid out 100, really he should be entitled to $50 back from Shimon, but he only gets $25. Hilkach neto Reviya b'karka Reviya b'mois. And the chiddush is that Shimon can pay him off by karka or using mois, which is sort of in lieu of karka, which is exactly Rav Asi's earlier statement that you can pay with karka or mois. So why the repetition? Elo says the Gemara mai harein ke karka. So it must be that when Rav Asi made that statement, money is like karka, he meant lina meitav. A mazik pays meitav. Well, you can pay off either best of your karka or money. So it's exactly what Ravuna told us. Let's revise the Gemara. Rasi is just concurring with Ravuna's halacha. When it comes to spending money for fulfillment of a mitzvah, you're obligated up to a third. What does that mean? My shlish. Ilei ma shlish. Beisai means a third of all your assets. So that means if he has three mitzvahs to do, he's broke. You mean to say if he encounters three mitzvahs which are costly, he'll pay all his assets, he'll be depleted of all his belongings? It's inconceivable that a Torah obligated a person to such an extent. Elam Rav Zera means like this. How much is a person meant to add? How much more is a person meant to spend to enhance a mitzvah fulfillment? The answer is up to a third of the actual mitzvah cost. So I mean like this. You know, a typical esrog goes for $100, let's say. If you want to be mahadar, get a real nice esrog, you add a third. But Rav Ashi, what does that mean, a third? Shlish min legav, a third from within. So let's say it was going for $100. So you add $33 for a total of $133. Shlish min levar, or When we say a third, it means of the total amount. So instead of 100, you add 50. And that 50 is a total, is a third of the total amount. So it's much more. Take it, we're not sure. B'mar Rava Amri, in Eretz Yisrael, they quoted Mishmei Derav Zera, Ashlish Mishaloi. There's no limit, really. Up to that, you know, extra third that you pay for Hidur Mitzvah, Mishaloi. That's sort of, you know, you're paying from what was meant, what was destined to you. The money which was meant for you. Meaning, you don't get schar for that in this world. You get it in, you know, Elam Haba. Mekan ve'elach Mishal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So until a third, it's your money spent. But going past the third, if you enhance the mitzvah even more, it's direct deposit from Hashem. Hashem will repay you in this world as well, says the Mishnah. Kol shechavti b'shmi rasoi. Anytime that I'm obligated, you know, to guard a potential harm doer, like my animal, hechshati es niskei. So if I neglect to watch over it, I enable the damage to take place. I'm responsible. Hechshati mitzas niskei. Suppose I enabled only part of that nezek. Chavdi b'tashlumi niskei. I'm fully responsible for the entire damage. Kehechshekal niskei. As if I enabled the entire thing. Let me explain exactly what this means. Upon damaging which properties, which assets am I chayv to pay? Nechasim shein by meila. Only things which don't belong to hamdish, which has the halacha of meila. It's only something which belongs to a common, you know, citizen. But if I'm mazik heglish, I'm potter. Likewise, has to belong to a yid. Nechasim shein shel bnei bris, as opposed to nechasim of a guy. Nechasim hamichadim, only assets which are owned by a person, as opposed to hefker. Ubuchal makim, in any way the damage takes place, I'm chayv, except chutz, mirushus, except for a place which is hamiyuchedes lamazik, which is meant for me only. You know, your animal walks into my backyard and gets harmed, I'm not responsible. Or urushus hanizik lamazik, or a place where the perpetrator and the victim have a right to, you know, have a right to use. So that place carries no responsibilities. Kishehizik chavamazik. So in any case where I'm meant to watch and guard and I neglect to do so, the mazik, the enabler, the one who did the damage, has to pay up l'shalom tashlumei nezek. From the best of my assets. Whenever I'm obligated to watch over my harm doer, my animal, whatever, if I neglect to do so, I am considered an enabler of that damage. Keitza, for instance. Okay, we have an ox, or we have a pit, an open pit. I was irresponsible. I handed these things over to an irresponsible person, a cherish, deaf mute, shoyta, deranged, or a katan, viziku. And now this shoyr or the bor caused damage, chayav, l'sham, I have to pay. Mashen ken beish, as opposed to a fire which is dealt with differently, I'm potter, even if I handed it over to an irresponsible person. How could that be? But my skin, what exactly happened? Ilayma b'shoyr kosher. So we spoke about an animal, a bor, an ash. Are they dormant? Or are they active? Which state are they in? Ilam b'shar kosher ubar mechusa. We're speaking about a shor which is totally tied up, harmless, or a bar which is totally covered. And these were sort of relegated to the cherushay to bekatan, right? The kavasoga b'ish. What's a comparable case by the fire, which is the case the Brisa speaks about? Gachelas. We're speaking about something dormant, relatively benign. You know, a coal as opposed to a burning flame. Okay, so that's the case in the Brisa. The shur, the bar, the ash were sort of dormant. So why the difference between the two? Between these two categories. Ma'ishno be'ish. Ma'ishno hacha. Or ma'ishno hacha. So why do we treat the shur and bar differently than the ash? By the shur and bar we say, well, I gave it to the cheshad v'gad, I'm a chayiv. But the ash, I'm not. What's the difference? They're both dormant. They're both benign. Right? Elo, so must be b'shar mutter bar megula. We're speaking about harmful things. A shar which is off his leash, a shar which is sort of loose, and a bar, so an untied shar, a bar which is megula, exposed. And these sort of present as potential hazards. The kavasoga b'esh. In similar fashion, when we speak about a fire, shalevis, a burning flame. And what does the Brisa say? By the shar and the bar, I'm chayiv. The potter, supposed by the fire and potter, why? For Amr Shlokish. Shlokish quotes Chizkiah. When do we say that if you send the fire with a cherish, a shayt v'katan potter, ela shemos legacheles. It's only when I gave him a coal, which was not yet something that causes harm. Beliban, the shayt of the cotton decided to blow it up and to get it fired up. So it's his doing, I'm potter. Aval shal heves chai, but if something I gave him a flame, a fire, an open hazard, of course I'm chai. My time of why? The habari azayka, because it's clearly a potential hazard. So back to the b'raisa, why do we differentiate? Why do we say by the masar eish to the shayt v'kat nampot? So the Gemara, you're right. Lo ilam b'shoyer kosher bar mechusar. We're speaking that these things are sort of relatively benign. Shoyer is sort of locked up. The bar is covered. The kavas sagav eish gachelas. Likewise, in the case of the fire, it's a dormant coal. Look, Amos, regarding your question, what's the difference between these three? Ma'ish na'ocha, why do we say by the shoyer and the bar handed to the cheresh amchayev? Or ma'ish na'ocha, why by the eish amipot? The answer is like this. Shoyer, when I give him a shoyer, I put the shoyer under his watch, I should have known better. It's a living being. It's a lebedic animal. The darkilin tuke. It's very common for an animal to sort of break loose of his moorings. I should have known better than give it to a cher or shoyte v'katan to watch. Likewise, by the bar. So it's covered today. But you know, tomorrow the lid might fall off. Darkilin turi. The lid could drop. Some pot. Some chay. As opposed to the gacheles. There, the longer the gachela sticks around, it sort of weakens and weakens until it dies out. So I was hoping for the best. I was hoping that, you know, by the time the shoyt of a cotton gets around to doing trouble, the gachela is already extinguished. So I'm less chayiv, and the b'raisa says I'm pot. But according to Rabbi Yechon's version, when the b'raisa says that by handing a chayr shoyt of a cotton, a ish, it's even speaking about an open fire. The gavasahacha. So likewise, in the case of the vishoyer mutar b'megula, in the case of the shoyer and the bar, we're speaking about open, unprotected obstacles. The shoyer, which is unmoored, the bar, which is exposed. Right? We're assuming all three cases are of similar nature, right? So what's the difference then? Ma'ishnahacha, ma'ishnahacha. Why by the shoyer and bar, despite the fact that they present a danger on potter, ma'ishnahacha by the fire am chayiv. Just the opposite, sorry. Why by the shor and the bar am I chayiv, and by the eish, I'm potter? So as the Gemara, there's still a difference. You know why? Awesome. Tzav so the cheresh kegorem. By the shor, sorry, by the fire. Awesome, by the fire. Even though I gave him, you know, a real fire. But ultimately, it's the cheresh's company. It's like sort of his association with the fire, the fact that he took it and he went and he burned, that's what caused damage. Rashi has two pshatim and tzafsa. The tzafsa is like a pliers, meaning holding on, the grip of the cherish, or the shoyt of the cotton, that's what caused damage. His contribution. He applied the fire and burnt something down. Another gira says tzafsa with a vav, his company. His accompanying the fire is what caused, what sort of spread the fire and cause it to burn things. So I'm pot. It's not my doing, it's his doing. As opposed to by the shoyer and by the bar, it's my thing. Ultimately, it was my animal that, you know, that caused damage. It's my pit that presented that obstacle. Sure, I gave it to the cheresh to watch, but you know it's not worth much. So the actual damage was brought about by my doing directly. Hacha, light stuff so the cheresh could garm. It's not the cheresh's, you know, association, right? It's not his involvement that brought about the hezek, and therefore the owner is chayiv. Okay, we'll continue Bez Hashem tomorrow. Let's just recap today's daf. So a fellow purchased a field without achrayas, and then there's trouble brewing. At what point can it be chayzer? We discussed that. We have Rav Huna who says, whenever we have a mazik, he can either pay meitav or kesef. Kesef is just as good. When it comes to hider mitzvah, Ad Shalish, past that, is directly compensated from Hashem in this world. Person enables a nezek is chayiv. We discussed the chiluk between putting the cher shayt v'katan in charge of a shoyer boyer, where you're chayiv, as opposed to an eish, where you're pata. We had two pshatim, one based on Rabbi Yechon, one based on Rish Lakish. All the best to you, and much, much hatzlacha.